Hey guys, this is a recording of a talk I had with Piyush, who is an engineer at Google, and he has his own YouTube channel, Tech Tutorials with Piyush. We were talking about engineering topics like Google Cloud. We were talking about Kubernetes, the stuff he does at work. We were talking also about his YouTube channel and his journey, how he got into Google and the hiring process of Google. So super interesting topics. Have fun with this talk. If you want to listen to this, this is also available under the Plumber of Data Science podcast that is available on iTunes and Spotify and so on. I'm going to put the link to that below. So let me know your comments below. Hit like if you like this and have fun with this talk. Piyush, welcome to this recording of our talk. Let's have a nice chat about data engineering, about Google, about education, about YouTube, and so on. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Andreas. Thanks. I was really looking forward to it. And thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to have a discussion with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for being here, because my goal for this year is to talk a bit more with professionals. As my case is right now, I'm out of the job market. I'm not working for a company. I'm working in education full time, and you lose the touch of this, right? You don't talk to colleagues anymore. You don't know what's going on, and you can't hear interesting stories from others. And I want to have this, the first version of this year, where I bring somebody on who has an interesting story, who can tell interesting stories to the audience, and hopefully help you also grow your YouTube channel, because that's definitely something.
Yeah, I'm glad to be part of your series that you have envisioned for this year. Really excited.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I already was mentioning in the intro Google and YouTube. What came first for you? Came first engineering and Google, or came first the YouTube channel?
Actually, I started my career with a production support role, and then I slowly transitioned into the DevOps role. I worked as a DevOps for like around 4 years, and then I moved into cloud engineering role, started with Azure Cloud, and then I got myself started with this YouTube journey. So I started my YouTube channel. I was working on it. I was actively contributing towards the community. And then one day, out of the blue, a recruiter from Google reached out to me about this amazing opportunity with them. And that's how it began. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to answer your question shortly, first it was production support, DevOps, then my YouTube, and then I got this job.
Do you think that was only because of YouTube, or also your LinkedIn profile or something?
I believe everything played a part of it. Like me getting interviewed with Google, or the recruiter reached out to me. It all comes apart when, I'll just start it from the beginning. So I believe everything played an important role. Every little things that I have done in past few years, it kind of played the role together to get me this job. So yes, YouTube made my profile strong, made me confident about what I'm doing. And, it helped me gain my skills and knowledge related to cloud and DevOps. Mm-hmm. And then when I started contributing towards the community through YouTube and LinkedIn and creating blogs and everything, my LinkedIn profile became stronger day by day, and recruiters tried to started noticing me, and I was getting a lot of calls from different companies, and everything played a role in that.
Do you think you needed the LinkedIn profile for this whole journey? Because I think, and what I have seen, is a lot of recruiters are coming through this, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people are looking at it right now. I also tell that to my students all the time. Like, you need to have a good LinkedIn profile, whatever you do.
So I believe being active on LinkedIn is one thing, and being an active contributor towards the LinkedIn community you know, it's a whole new thing. So when we become active on YouTube, when we become active on LinkedIn, we just become active during the job search phase, when we are looking for a job or when we are looking for a change. But what I think is, when we become active on LinkedIn throughout the time, throughout, you know, whatever we are doing, whether we are comfortable with our existing job and whether we are not looking for any job, that's what, you know, made the difference. So for me as well, I was active on LinkedIn throughout that. I was not even looking for a job. I was happy with my current role and I was, you know, not really looking for it. But then when, you know, Google reach out to you for an opportunity, you wouldn't just say no to that. So yeah, so things happened for me. It, everything, you know, contributed and everything just worked out well for me.
So you said, on other platforms as well. Are you also on, like, are you writing blog posts or where are you writing?
Yeah, I'm writing blog posts on medium.com and blog. And dev.to. Uh-huh. Yeah, so because I'm an AWS community builder as well, so I post the blogs on dev.to on that community. And on Google Cloud as well, I'm part of, I'm a published writer on their medium.com community. So okay. I write my blogs over there as well.
Cool. Yeah. It's nowadays it's everything comes together, right?
Yes,
you need to have a strong profile and you need to it was a need. Like I was working with data all the time. I was doing engineering and I wanted to teach people. I wanted to show what you can do. And it feels like for you, it was the same thing. You were in DevOps and then you decided to do YouTube to teach stuff, which your channel has a lot of tutorials, right? Tech tutorials with Piyush.
So. Yeah. So the reason why I started in the beginning is because I wanted to retain my knowledge. So, you know, you work on something and then after a time you forget about it. So I wanted something that if I'm not working on a particular skill for, let's say, a year or two, I should have something to go back and revisit and recall everything that I learned in the past. So with that in mind, I started with my first video, and when I was started getting a lot of response from the folks, so I thought maybe I'll just keep doing it, and you know, and if it is helping others as well, then it's just cherry on the top. I'm getting my learning and at the same time I'm contributing towards the community and helping other to, you know, gain their skill set and to keep themselves updated to the market. So I guess it worked out well for me, because, you know, it started with a thought and then it became a habit. So now I love doing it.
Cool. Yeah, it's also, I've been watching a few videos. You see this progression. In the beginning, you were never on the screen. You were always
recording. It took me a while. So it took me almost a year. I was really afraid to face the camera. I was really afraid to talk to people like this, like the thing we are doing now. So I thought maybe I'll start with the faceless channel first. And when I'm comfortable enough, then I'll maybe show my face in front of camera. Then I'll maybe go live with the podcast and everything.
Yeah.
So that's how I, you know, slowly make that progression.
Yeah. But I think it's okay. If that's how you want to do this and that's how you feel, then that's the right thing for you, right? Sometimes people say, oh man, you need to be on screen. And of course it's better if you're on screen because people can see you, people can relate to you, but it's not that pressure.
I mean, it makes sense to do the thing slowly rather than not doing it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I had in mind.
Yeah. Do you have any cool videos coming up? I saw the most popular video, like that one was fire, 57,000 views.
Yeah.
GitLab. Yeah.
So when I published that video, there wasn't a lot of GitLab videos on YouTube at that time, like an year ago somewhere. So it gained popularity in a short period of time. I was getting around 1,000 views per day. But then over the time when other people started publishing videos in the same genre, so, you know, now it's not getting that many views, but still it's one of my popular videos. And because I tried to cover everything from scratch, I tried to give the example of a real-time CI/CD project, like how we do it in an organization. So I guess that's what make it really popular among all my other videos.
Yeah, it's one hour. Oh, how long is it? 1 hour, 20 minutes almost. Like, that's a good one.
And it was like for me, because I just started the YouTube channel at that time. So everything was too time consuming for me, be it research, recording, editing, publishing, everything. So it took a lot of time for me. But in the end, I was really happy that people were liking it and everyone gave me a nice feedback about it. So I was really happy with the success of that video. Hey, So to answer your question about my upcoming videos, I'm working on few things on site. I have a plan in place, like to create a roadmap for the freshers or for the working professionals that want to those who want to switch their career into cloud engineering. So I'm preparing a roadmap videos for them, like how do they start, what all things they need to cover. And, you know, so that's what my plan is for this year, along with some other videos related to Azure certifications, like AZ-900 is what I have in my upcoming pipeline. And Terraform videos, GCP videos, AWS. So yeah, everything, a mix of everything, but I'll be mostly focusing on the cloud engineering roadmaps.
Cool. What's the difference for cloud engineering versus data engineering? How would you say there's a difference?
But like there'll be a lot of difference. Like when we talk about cloud engineering or like the starter role, let's say a cloud support role. So we mostly work on all the, you know, all the services a little bit, right? I'm working in Google, so I'm working on a specific product. Let's say I'm working on GKE right now, like Google Kubernetes Engine. So I hardly touch other services other than GCE and GKE, right? So for a data engineer, I would say they work specifically on data, like the data services and not the other compute services or maybe the Kubernetes and all those things. So I really didn't have much experience working with data engineering and how does it fit with this role. But I would say there is some difference.
But yeah, these are, I find this very interesting. Also like the CI/CD stuff and so on. That's all that you also need that in engineering.
Yes, right? Yes. So nowadays it's a requirement, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap between between all the roles. And that's what I love about engineering. Like if you learn, or if you become an engineer and you are automatically in companies are going to learn to use certain tools. And then if you want to make a transition into something else, you could actually do that because it's so broad.
So when you get into a role, you have this opportunity to, you know, explore other services, explore other areas that comes within your horizon, and you can easily make a switch, like from a cloud engineering role to a data engineering to a DevOps engineering to something else, AI ML or something else. So that it's totally also depend upon your interest and experience.
So you said you worked on Azure. You're also working on GCP. What's your advice for somebody who starts out? Like, which one would you choose right now?
So if I talk about my experience, I started with AWS, then I moved to Azure, and then I'm working in GCP. So whether you're working with either of these clouds, it's one and the same thing. The basic building blocks, the basic concept of cloud computing is same, no matter whatever cloud you choose. It's just what makes you comfortable and what makes you, you know, getting a lot of chances to get your first job should be the one that you choose first. So, for example, a lot of companies in the market today, they are working in AWS. It has a lot of market share when it comes to cloud computing. So it'll be a good decision to start with AWS. And because the user interface that it provides, it's easy to learn, easy to understand. And, you know, so that's what, that's why I chose AWS first. But other than that, like, it doesn't matter which cloud you choose first, you know, you just work toward it. And once you are comfortable with that, once you are comfortable enough, then you can, you know, try to explore other clouds as well. Like, what does it offer? What other pros it has over this particular cloud? And what additional features that it will provide you?
Yeah, it fits to what you've said earlier, that you can switch between roles very easily. Mm-hmm. It's same thing with clouds, right? If you know one, yeah, then it's not super difficult to learn another.
Yeah, but the important thing is to keep yourself updated with the market, keep yourself upgraded. So if you stick to one cloud, you know, in future, in next few years, you will be kind of obsolete in the market, because we don't know which cloud will gonna stick till the end of this era, or, you know, we don't know when the other clouds will become popular and overtake the current leader in the market. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I think the three that we have right now are very strong, so it will be very difficult to replace these.
No, I mean among these three itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also depends. So when I was working with coaching students, mm-hmm. we were also exploring like a different industries and what different industries are using, or even in countries. And it's very interesting that in different industries, you have different clouds.
Yes.
You have in different countries, some countries only Azure. Mm-hmm. Everybody's using Azure. So it's also... this is also a very important factor to look at.
Yeah, totally agree with you on this as well.
So, but it's cool. I started with Hadoop, and then moved to Azure, and not Azure, moved to AWS. Looked into Azure, wasn't happy with Azure. So,
That's what I was saying. Like, you won't know unless you try it out yourself. So you tried it, you think that wasn't for me. You move to back to AWS, but at least you tried.
Yeah,
that's the important thing.
Yeah, well, I think Azure right now has a very strong offering for larger corporations that are already in the Microsoft ecosystem, have everything from Microsoft, and then most of the time they go the safe bet and go to Microsoft.
The most interesting thing that I found about Azure was Azure DevOps. Like, none of the other cloud providers has a suite of application that supports end-to-end CI/CD, and that too just within one app.
Mm-hmm.
So Azure DevOps is a game changer, and it has gained a lot of popularity in past few years.
Yeah, they have good tools. Also, Data Factory and so on. These tools are good.
Yes, Data Factory.
They have. And also, what did my students also use? The analytics suite, where Synapse, where you can also host host Spark clusters and so on. Run your Spark code there natively. Mm-hmm. It's good. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something. So, Google is this. I think whenever you talk about Google, Google is this top thing, right? Google is the top company. Everybody, especially in engineering, wants to work at Google. I have last year they contacted me about becoming a cloud, how was it called? Cloud champion or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When you contribute something towards the community.
Yeah.
So there is this community membership that you get, cloud innovator champion, something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Cloud innovators. Yes. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. And I also got a bag, and I was wearing that bag because I had to carry something. And people were like, oh, Google. Wow. So how is it to work at Google? So general.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like I joined Google, or when we, you know, talk about Google, we don't get to see a lot of benefits that we get as part of being a Googler. So the work culture is amazing. The benefits are amazing. People respect each other. They take your opinion for, you know, they do consider their opinion in every matter, no matter what. And I just love working here. Even after joining Google, I got a lot of calls from AWS and, you know, the higher role such as DevOps lead and other role. But, you know, I just respectfully denied those requests because I was happy doing what I'm doing. And then if you are like, as part of being a Googler, if you are not happy with your current role, or if you like to explore other areas as well, then after, you know, spending a certain time in a role, you can switch to other roles as well easily. You can change your countries, wherever the position is. So it's pretty easy and, you know, straightforward process.
Cool. Yeah, that's the upside of working in a big corp generally, right? Because back in my days, at the Bosch days, you were able to go to different areas or to different companies within Bosch if you found a good job. But what I hear all the time is, and I had that discussion with students before, is it the upside in Google that there are a lot of, let's say, top professionals, so you have that network where you're not starting in a small startup where you're the sole data engineer.
Yes, exactly.
Or sole engineer, but you have that community and people can support you.
Yeah, I totally agree with that point as well. I'll give you my example. So when I joined, GCP was new to me. I never worked on GCP. And I joined within the GKE team. So it's, you know, one step ahead of just working on the compute services. So when I started working, I faced a lot of issues because it was new to me. And, you know, I had a lot of challenges working directly with the customers and everything. Mm. But we do have a mentor assigned to each of the Googlers when they join. Cool. So there is a technical mentor, there is a non-technical mentor. So you can reach out to your mentor and they will, you know, sync up to you regularly and just to make sure you are comfortable with what you are doing. And if your mentor is busy and if they are not able to support you with something, you know, you can go one level up. You can just, you know, post your concern or your query in the group chats that we have for each of the services. We have different channels. So you post it there and someone will pick it up and someone will, you know, ping you and say, hey, let's have a call and discuss this. Cool. So people offer their help. You know, you just have to show that you need help. And everyone will just, you know, stop what they are doing and they just try to help you. This is by far the most amazing experience that I have found working with Google. And these people that I'm saying, they are subject matter experts. They are, you know, really on the top of their game. And sometimes they just stop their work to help you out. And
that's cool.
They're not getting anything out of it, right? They are hindering their work, they are helping it out, and then their time is also really important. But even then they are doing it, and that's what I found really amazing and interesting.
Yeah, I guess so, because it may be, you could see it from a point that this is time spent for this one person, but if you look at an overall company view, it's a good game because you're going to win because this other person, in this case, you gets help, gets support.
And it has now become this culture. So it's not something that people do just for the sake of doing it. It's a culture that Google supports and promotes.
Nice. Wow. I had other experiences with other companies. Next week we can talk. Kubernetes, you said that's your main thing. Do you have videos on that?
I don't think I have published any Kubernetes videos till now. There was one I created on AKS, like provisioning AKS cluster using Terraform. So, and there was one short video about GKE. It's a 15-minute video, just the introduction of GKE. So these two videos I have for the Kubernetes till now.
Yes, I think especially for DevOps, that's been a game changer.
Right? Yeah, Kubernetes, and it is a must to have technology or skill sets these days. Like no role, no DevOps or cloud role is complete without Kubernetes.
You think so?
I definitely, I felt so, and I have, you know, that's what got me into Kubernetes. Because people are now moving away from virtual machines to microservices. And when you implement microservice, you need an orchestration system to manage all those microservices. That's where Kubernetes comes into the picture.
Yeah, I'm not, well, What do you think then of, AWS Fargate? I mean, it's not Kubernetes, but it's containerized. A containerized environment where you can host your containers, where you can use CI/CD pipelines to run this. What do you think when you compare these two?
I guess that I haven't worked with the Fargate, but what I know is, like, it's a managed service, a Kubernetes managed service, where you don't have to manage the servers, but still on the back end they are running a Kubernetes cluster.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the hosts are abstracted and you don't get controls over the operating systems and the virtual machines, but on the back end it's Kubernetes itself.
The question is, if you already know how to work with that, do you really need to get into Kubernetes?
Because that particular service, whether it's AWS Fargate or GCP has also this offering called Cloud Run. So those use cases, those services, they should be used with a very specific use case. They cannot replace all the Kubernetes based clusters, right? So there are a lot of companies and there are a lot of use cases where you need to have control over the underlying infrastructure. So we cannot use these services over there.
That's true. Very often it's also, you use the software as a service tool if it's pretty simple and if you're not hosting thousands of containers.
Yeah, exactly.
But if it's getting big, then you need to do the switch. Otherwise, you're going to pay. It gets complicated. It gets super expensive, right?
Yeah, I know.
But generally, these are not cheap tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is really costly services as well, because you are getting a managed service and it comes with a lot of price. So yeah, so as I was mentioning before getting into Google, I really wanted to get into AWS because that was the first cloud that I ever worked with, and and that is how I developed my interest into cloud computing. So I applied in AWS and I got my first interview as a DevOps consultant role. I interviewed there around 4 years back or somewhere. And then after all the rounds, I got rejected. I'm not even sure the reason behind it, but they said, unfortunately, we cannot, proceed further with the application.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
So that was my first reaction, but then it didn't stop me. It just, it just excited me more. Like if I could interview there and if I could go through all the rounds, maybe I should try again and, work on the skills that I didn't have before. So I spent some time, around 6 months, on myself, working on my skills and everything. And then I interviewed again for a different role. It was, I guess, DevOps. It was a technical account manager role. And I got rejected again and again and again and again. So there was a time when I was interviewing for two different roles at the same time. One was a senior cloud technical account manager. Another role was a senior DevOps consultant. And I was rejected in both of them. So in a span of 3 to 4 years, I was rejected around 7 times. And that was the interviews that I'm mentioning, to mention all the applications that got rejected before the interview. Right?
Do you think that was after like 2 or 3 that was still because of you or because of the system or the like they saw, Piyush already applied 3 times, didn't work out.
I kept on applying to different roles. I kept on exploring different roles. And after a time, I was getting calls. I was getting interviews scheduled. I didn't see any issues with that. Although they have a soft lock for 6 months if you apply for the same role.
Okay.
But I was applying to the different and similar roles. There was nothing as such for me. But there was this thing happen. So the first role that I was mentioning you, DevOps consultant role, it was, I guess, a level 4 role at that time when I applied, when I got rejected during the first time. After I joined Google and after like 4 or 5 months, I got the call again from the same role, for the same role,
mm-hmm.
but for a higher level. It was a DevOps team lead role within the same team, through the same hiring manager. And a recruiter told me, like, we have grown, we have seen that you have grown a lot in your career now. And, you know, you have developed a lot of skills that you didn't have before. So we would like to interview again with for the same team.
Okay.
And, you know, I just couldn't say yes at this time now because, you know, I'm at a better place. So yeah, that the reason that I was mentioning is because if I would have stopped after the first rejection, I wouldn't have gotten where I am today. So yeah, all the rejections, all the interview experience, that made me a better person. Because after each interview, I just go back home. I just list down all the questions that were asked, like whatever I could remember. I list everything down and see where I am lacking and where I need to, you know, improve my skill.
Cool.
So that's how I improved myself over the time. And it was a process for me. It was a long process, but then at the end, I was able to make it.
Cool. You said the interview process,
mm-hmm.
you worked on yourself. You didn't get discouraged by this, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of people most likely would.
Yeah, I do get that discouragement, but it was like I didn't keep myself discouraged for more than a couple of days. So I just took some time to absorb the rejection, and then I continued my journey, my learning journey.
So when we were talking about Google, it's notorious that Google has this difficult application mm-hmm. process, difficult interview process. Is it really that difficult?
I believe Google and Amazon, they have the similar kind of interview process, because I have been through a lot of Amazon interview. It really helped me getting prepared for Google interview. So like in Amazon, you have this leadership principles. Like there are 14 leadership principles in Amazon, and there were a lot of questions around that. A lot of behavioral and hypothetical scenarios will be given to you, and you answer based on your past experience and your own opinions. In this Google, we have a similar sort of principles, and they are called as, you can view them as the principles of Google. And in Google, there are rounds around them, and it's called Googliness and leadership. Right. So it has the same format where you've been given two types of question. Basically, one is a hypothetical and one is an behavioral question. Like, what would you do if you are disagreeing with your manager on something? That's a hypothetical scenario. And behavioral questions such as, give me the example of a time where you had to disagree with your manager. Mm-hmm. What was the situation? What did you do? And why did you do that? Mm-hmm. So, Google and also like the interview rounds in Amazon, we have this interview loop where you are interviewed back to back, like 4 or 5 interview rounds within a day. Okay. And Google has the same format. You know, you get a break between each interview, like 10 minutes break, and then you get passed with another interviewer for the next round.
Okay.
So I guess, the first round that I had with Amazon was the difficult one because I wasn't aware what I was getting into. But after certain interviews, I was pretty comfortable with the format.
Okay.
So yeah, it's pretty unusual for someone who have not interviewed with these companies before. But I guess it was an amazing experience.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, because like people, you hear a lot of stories, how difficult it is and the process. I like that it's within a day. It saves a lot of scheduling.
Yeah, it saves a lot. It saves a lot of time. Yes, definitely.
And otherwise, you do a round, then people are discussing it, then they... Mm-hmm. they schedule you for another session, I don't know, a week later or something, and then it drags on and on and on, and this is like, boom. Would they actually, in this, basically tell you or throw you out after two sessions? Or how?
No. You will still be like, whether you are rejected in any of those rounds, the decision that matters is the collective decision of all the interviewers. So every interviewer, let's say you have 5 rounds in a day, every interviewer will post their feedback in the internal tool along with all your answers and your responses and give their opinion. And then there is this hiring community. And then there is this hiring committee who make the final decision.
Oh, that's good.
And the people that are part of hiring community are not the same people as the interviewers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow, that's good.
So it's the most unbiased and super transparent process that I have seen as we talk about interviews.
Wow, that's not that's a good thing.
And there is this, like, once you are done with all the interviews, there is one round which is a team matching round, something in which you get a chance to talk to your hiring manager. And, you know, discuss about the role, and you can ask various questions, like whatever you have in mind. And then you decide whether you want to go in that team or not. If you don't satisfy, like, this is a right team for you, then you can reach out to your recruiter and he will patch you with some other manager or some other team.
Okay, so it's not automatically done. Like, you're through, they say they want you, but you get information more about the team. Are you going to get in touch with the team at that
stage? No, you get in touch with the hiring manager or the SME of that team, and you can ask as many as doubt you have. And yeah, you can, you know, reach out to your recruiter if you think you should be a part of some other team or this is not the right team for you.
Yeah.
For
so
any
you're not
reason.
Automatically out of the whole process.
So once you are through all the rounds and once hiring committee make the decision that yes, you should join us, then you know, you can change the team as well.
Nice. Yeah, it's, you're a professional, they want you to do the best work you can. Why put you somewhere where that isn't 100% fit? Makes sense. Wow. Okay, that's really good.
Yeah.
So yeah, where are you based, by the way?
I'm in Canada, so my office is in Waterloo. But like, with Google has implemented a hybrid work culture during the COVID. And so I really go to office. It's just once in 15 days or a month. And it's up to us whether we want to go to office or not. So other than that, we mostly work from home.
For me, it was because when COVID started, I still had my job. I was working from home for a year. For me, it was really at times really difficult
because I had to go to office.
No, to stay in touch with the colleagues.
Yeah, that is a challenge of working from home. Yeah,
because I was used to having people around, and sometimes you have a question and the other person is sitting just over there, and you stand up and like, hey. Can I ask you something? Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There's your question. And it's like this, you meet the other while getting a coffee at the coffee machine or something, right?
Yeah.
I think that was a real challenge. But you're happy with working remote.
Like, yeah, I'm happy now because it saves me a lot of time travel.
Hmm.
Because my office is like 90 kilometers from my home, and it saves me like 2.5 hours a day of commute. Okay. So I'm happy if I take that into account, you know. But yeah, there are some cons of working from home as well. Like you mentioned, like, what could have been just a small hi, hello, and, you know, can you help me with this? It has to be a meeting as we are working from home.
Yeah. Yeah, or so, you write a message and this other person has to see the message to be
and
able
plus
to
we engineer. Don't have that interaction with our colleagues and co-workers.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, and now that we are working from home, we don't have that interaction with our colleagues and co-workers.
Yeah, unfortunately. But it's good that you're able to go there from time to time and get in touch with people.
So we do go there to celebrate sometime. We went there during Christmas party and then New Year party. And we do like we ping each other in our Teams chat and, try to go to the office when most of the people are coming so that we can interact with them. We can have a nice conversation over coffee or lunch.
Yeah. It's very, very important. Like the social interaction is super important. People underestimate this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can work from home and everything's fine, but you actually need that. You need to meet from time to time, see each other. Mm-hmm. Also, the discussions that come up are very different than during the normal workday.
Exactly. So
I like it. Okay, so you're happy there. That's awesome to hear. What do you see in your future? Like, what's a topic that you want to get into this year or next year? What do you see?
You mean as part of my YouTube or like in general, my learning?
As part of engineering in general.
Now that I'm working with GKE and Kubernetes itself is a vast topic. There is something new coming up every day. I want to get certain level of expertise with Kubernetes. Plus, I want to explore, because I have lost touch with other CI/CD tools that have emerged in past couple of years. So I wanted to explore a few other tools such as Argo CD, CircleCI, and some other tools that are making a huge difference nowadays. So I guess I'm going to explore those areas plus some GCP specific services such as monitoring, logging, GKE I'm already working with, and then some security services. That's what I aim to do next.
Cool. So it's more the not running after some hype that is currently here, but like
no, because the hype that is there today, it won't be there tomorrow. I just don't really stick to one skill set on one area. I just want to explore different things and see what interests me more.
Cool. That's awesome. And your YouTube?
For YouTube, as I've already mentioned, like I'm planning for a cloud engineering roadmap. Plus I'll be publishing few full tutorials, like end-to-end tutorials related to Argo CD or Google services, AWS, Azure certifications, courses. So yeah, that's what I plan to do.
Yeah. So you're going to stay in the line of tutorials, like the name of your channel.
Yeah. And podcast as well. Like I recently started doing some podcasts with the professionals like we are doing today. So this is really an interesting thing to do other than publishing tutorials and all those things.
Nice.
So yeah, this I would really like to keep doing.
I think YouTube is an awesome tool to get in touch with people, to talk with people, to get in touch with the community and also
exactly
chill on the couch and watch something. Piyush, then I say let's finish up here. We're 49 minutes or almost in here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. It was really my pleasure to have this discussion with you. Yeah, I'm really glad.
Was really fun. Thanks for being here. I wish you all the best with your YouTube channel. I know YouTube can be rough, that you put a lot of time into something and then nobody sees it, or same thing on LinkedIn. But I wish you a lot of fun with it. Have fun.
Thank you so much.
I'm trying to send this over to a few people here and bring them. And I'm also going to link below Piyush's channel.
So thank you so
much.
If you
haven't seen it yet, if you're watching this and you haven't seen it, it's down in the description of this. So give him a follow. Check out his tutorials. Really cool. Thanks, Piyush.
Thank you so much, Andreas. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye. Take care.